All right. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska is now open for the transaction of business. Draw nigh, all ye having business with this honorable court, and ye shall be heard. God save the state of Nebraska and this honorable court.
Thank you. You may be seated. Good morning to everyone. We will begin this morning with introductions from the court. My name is Mike Havikin, and I am the Chief Justice, and now, by order of seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller-Lerman.
William Castle. Good morning.
Stephanie Stacy. Good morning.
Good morning. I am Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik. Good morning.
And John Friedenberg.
Thank you, members of the court. Our first case this morning is Foot versus Keener. Mr. Island, good morning to you, and Ms. Mitchell.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning to you. Do either of you have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Mitchell?
No, Your Honor.
Very good. Then, Mr. Island, you may approach and you may proceed.
Your Honors, protection orders are injunctions. And injunctions, protection orders have a special proceeding that you make a showing of the threshold issue, whether or not there's harassment, whether or not there's domestic violence, or in this instance, whether or not there's sexual assault of some type in the past. Once you meet that threshold issue, then you move on to a showing of whether or not there's a need for future, some type of protection, and the risk of future harm, damage, or irreparable harm. And in this instance, the problem we have is the overviewing judge said you only get to the threshold issue, and then you make no step beyond that. Now, I understand it's the Court of Appeals, and SB basically took that same approach that said these are injunctive. You make your showing, and then we go from there. And in that case, they had repetitive contact. They're going to have continued interactions with each other, and there was a concern about that. And therefore, crafting some type of protection order in that instance was necessary. That's not the instance in this case. In this instance, we have years of continued interaction with no threat or risk of harm. And there was some type of discussion about a concern about retaliation. But that retaliation was in terms of litigation, lawsuits, something that you would have a right or an ability. And so in this instance, the judge applied the wrong standard in terms of determining whether or not a protection order should issue.
Could I ask a question about, you said, yes, retaliation?
Yes.
Was a form of litigation?
Yes.
Where in the record do we pick that?
That was in the recross, I forget the exact page number of Ms. Foote, that when she's talked about the retaliation, that it was in terms of threats of lawsuits. And I believe it was libel or slander. I can't remember if that was the exact terms used. And that's the one issue, and that is, what does retaliation mean? In this instance, what we have is a threat of litigation. I think that, well, you may not like litigation. You know, most of us outside of being attorneys don't care for it. But that's part, I think that's your legal remedy, and that's a legal right that you would be allowed to proceed if you thought there was a potential risk there. That's not a risk of harm to the person. There's no risk of harm to her on a personal level. There's no risk or threat of any type of harm to her in terms of how she could be injured or anything like that. So if you get past, yes.
Can the judge or anyone else draw inferences from the fact that parties might be litigious?
I guess I hadn't thought of that issue. I would say no, because if I'm litigious and I'm using the legal process, the court can impose sanctions if it's a frivolous action. The court can take action, but you're not putting that individual at risk of harm by trying to bring their claim to the court. In fact, I think that's what we want.
Well, can you draw inferences such as, if someone is going to be retaliate with litigation, they might retaliate with other?
I don't believe so, if there's no indication that that would be present. Now, if there's some type of indication that they said, I will strike you, I will hunt you down, I will make you pay for all this, outside of that litigation, that would probably be reasonable, but not an inference. And that's why in this case, I don't understand what retaliation means when we talk about it. The other problem we have is these are not the kind of cases that we want to get into full-blown litigation. I know the district courts already don't like hearing these cases generally, and when we're trying to set these in contested matters, trying to get much time has become very difficult. A sex assault protection order, that could go on for days. I mean, we had a jury trial on this in the criminal aspect. And these
Excuse
are concerns.
Me, can I, let's back up to the legal
sure.
framework just to make
right.
sure we're all in agreement on what it is that you believe is the law. That under the sexual assault protection order, there needs to be a threshold sexual assault as a finding. And thereafter, in your view, there must be a demonstration of risk of harm in the future as evidenced by the evidence.
Right.
Right? So that from the legal standpoint and the framework, you believe that the trial court erred as a matter of law when the trial court said, I found a sexual assault, I need not find anything else. That's the legal issue, right? And
right.
I think what you're saying is you want this court to at least, regardless of the outcome, to clarify the law as to whether or not there's a second element, i.e. risk of harm in sexual assault protection orders.
That is correct, Your Honor. I think this court hasn't addressed it squarely head
right.
on. I'm assuming that's why this court took this case. That's why I asked to bypass, because I
thought that is that second element in the statute?
No, well, yes and no. I'd say it is, because when you look at the domestic violence interpretation cases, they use the term may issue, which is discretionary. Maria A. specifically talks about that discretionary language, which means it's not required. And then it becomes, because it's injunctive, then the respondent is allowed to come forward and show why it should not continue. If you look at the Maria A. framework that this court set out, that was a domestic violence. I understand it's a little different, but it looks exactly the same if you look at the sections. There's some different sections in the sexual assault, but basically they transpose that language right into the sexual assault protection orders.
So let me interrupt, I think, because more recently, didn't we write about in Otto that in with a remedy of injunctions, implicit in the issuance of an injunction must be a future risk of harm. It's not a remedy. It's not $10 for your trouble. It's a future.
It's right. It's an injunctions are extraordinary
right.
remedies. That's Maria A.
Right.
And there has to be some type of risk of future harm. And in that case, that was a renewal If I thought it was Ott, so I might be
confusing the wrong case.
Well,
it's been so long, only a few months.
Yeah, it was last year. It's not that
so
long ago.
So yesterday, okay. But we did write about the implication of a statutory remedy of injunction.
Right. But that was a domestic violence case.
Right.
And I think that's the problem is we have a lot of the domestic violence interpretation of the law. It just seems that it's natural that it would apply to sexual abuse or sexual contact. The problem we have in this case is if the judge's understanding of the law is if there's enough to say that there could be a sexual assault, that's the end of the inquiry. The original protection order may have been issued improperly. Well, that's not before the court necessarily.
If we agree with you that the district court erred to the extent he says, the only issue before me is whether there was a sexual assault.
Right.
Would it be your argument that we should send this back to the trial court with directions for the trial court to consider this under a clarification of the law? Or should we go ourselves and make a determination under the law as we set it forth?
Well, I think I would like to have it sent back because obviously there's some, obviously when you're doing these quickly, you make oversights. But in this instance, I think since you have de novo review, you are allowed, I think, to make that decision. But if it's I guess I never thought of the clarification sending it back that way.
Are we suited to, are there credibility determinations relevant to the risk of future harm that it would be more appropriate for the judge who heard the testimony to make?
There would be, except for the judge made no credibility findings. So I think you have, if it's a de novo, you have to look at the facts and evidence before you and make a decision based on
those. If the judge said he found her credible, would that change your argument?
Well, he did say he found that her statements were credible, but those were statements about whether they existed or not whether or not there's a future harm, because the judge only understood his role within the limited scope of whether or not there was a sexual assault that had occurred. Well, it's disputed. We disagree with that. We thought the better issue in this instance was the future harm, and that's what we brought to the court. I'll reserve any remaining time for rebuttal if there's no other questions.
Thank you very much. Ms. Mitchell.
Thank you.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
If it would please the court, Mr. Eiland. My name is Michelle Mitchell. I'm with Legal Aid of Nebraska, and we represent AF, the appellee in this matter. Appellant sexually assaulted AF. In late 2018 and early 2019, he was eventually arrested and charged. On the day that appellant's criminal case concluded, AF completed a petition, an affidavit for a sexual assault protection order, as she correctly understood that the no contact provision in the criminal case was no longer in effect. The trial court entered that ex parte sexual assault protection order the same day the appellant was served and requested the show cause hearing to show cause why the ex parte sexual assault protection order should not remain in effect for a year. At the show cause hearing, AF testified about the sexual assault by the appellant and explained why she filed her sexual assault petition in 2022 for sexual assaults that have occurred in late 2018 and 2019. Appellant did not testify at the show cause hearing, but argued then, as he does here, that there needs to be a showing of continuing threat or future harm for the affirmance of a sexual assault protection order, and that the passage of time occurring between the appellant's sexual assault of AF and AF's filing of her petition for the protection order should preclude her from obtaining the protection order. As was discussed previously, at the close of evidence, the district judge found correctly that AF had met her burden to show by a preponderance of the evidence that the sexual assaults had occurred. The Maria A. case then shifts that burden to the appellant to show cause why that protection order should not be affirmed. And that cause was not shown by the appellant. Instead, the appellant argued that because he had not sexually or otherwise assaulted AF after those initial ones, that she doesn't deserve the sexual assault protection order.
What do we do about the district court's statements? First, What do you understand the district court to have said? Mr. Island argues that the district court said, the only issue before me is whether a sexual assault occurred.
The SB court made it clear that the only thing a sexual assault victim has to show in order to have an ex, or a, I'm sorry, a sexual assault protection order is the sexual assault, period. That's all that court says. And I can quote from that SB Pfeiffer case, quote, a protection order is analogous to an injunction. A party seeking an injunction must establish by a preponderance of the evidence every controverted fact necessary to entitle the claimant to relief. Accordingly, a party seeking a sexual assault protection order pursuant to section 28-1111 must prove a sexual assault offense by a preponderance of the evidence.
It doesn't say only. It says you have to prove a sexual assault by a preponderance of the evidence, but it also doesn't say only, correct?
That's the burden on the petitioner in a sexual assault case. So the burden was met. And so the burden then shifts, and that's the Maria A. case, where the burden then shifts to the respondent to show cause why it shouldn't be, why the ex parte shouldn't be affirmed.
But in Maria, didn't this court take a look at all of the evidence, because in that case the respondent didn't testify and he didn't offer evidence.
So
it shifted to him and he didn't put on evidence, but nevertheless the court determined from all of the evidence it had that the order was no longer required.
And the Maria A. case found that the court may consider other factors, likelihood of future harm. That was a different framework. This is a sexual assault protection order. That was a domestic abuse protection order. And the court did find that it could consider such things as remoteness, severity, nature, and frequency of past abuse, past or pending credible threats of harm, psychological impact. That's huge in the sexual assault area, potential impact of the parent-child relationship, of course. So that's kind of narrow there, and the nuances of the household relationships, which is also a narrow reading of that.
Let me back up. It's not entirely clear to me. Are you saying it's a failure, or there was proof of future harm, or are you saying proof of future harm is not required?
I don't think proof of future harm is required in a sexual assault protection order. It's a very different type of, I guess, protection order to put
but the
same framework.
The relief is an injunction. So if a court's issuing an injunction, what factors might it take into account?
Well, I think the fact that it's a sexual assault, that's a very, you know, sexual assaults, I'm not saying that domestic violence isn't egregious, but sexual assaults are very egregious. They have criminal sanctions. One thing that my colleague did include in her brief, with regards to that, is to put limitations on sexual assault protection orders kind of flies in the face of the... I'm sorry. I'll just use an example. In a first degree and second degree sexual assault in a criminal charge, there's not a statute of limitations. And so how can we say that a criminal perpetrator of sexual assault can be charged at any time, but the victim can't go get a sexual assault protection order because they're time barred?
Counsel, I'd like to return to Judge Miller-Lerman's question and phrase it a little bit differently, and that is, are you taking the position that future harm has no realm, should have no effect upon the decision at all, or are you saying that it was the obligation of the respondent to make a showing that there was no risk of future harm?
Well, that's a good question. I guess my position is that there, It's how do you prove that negative, I guess. So perhaps if there had to be some kind of future harm, I imagine it would need to be the respondent's duty then to show that, because I don't know how a victim of sexual assault can know that somebody will sexually assault them again, or even contact them. I mean, that's what the sexual assault protection order, you know, it has to do with contact.
Aren't you in effect saying that whenever there's been a sexual assault, or there's a finding that there has been, there's at least an inference of future harm that arises from that finding?
I think there's, absolutely.
And then I take it your position is that the burden falls on the other party to show that there's not a risk of future harm.
I would agree with that, probably so, yes. I think that the other party has to show that, and in this case, he didn't. That is part of that show, maybe that's part of that show cause. He didn't show cause that that wouldn't occur again, even though the sexual assaults happened 3.5 years previous, because they went for over a year and a half with not bringing those up, and he, the respondent or the appellant, put that in motion and contacted, the appellee, and, you know, brought up information.
I'm not keeping up with you. You're saying future harm is relevant. In this case, he didn't prove future harm. Therefore, no protection order?
No. So he didn't prove, in the protection order, the framework is she proved that there was a sexual assault. She met her burden by a preponderance of the evidence. The court found that. The burden then shifts to him to show cause why it shouldn't stay in effect. So the burden would be on him to show why.
The presumption is it will continue.
Correct. Thank you.
In the few seconds you have remaining, would you respond to what your opponent said to Judge Packick's question about assuming that we think that the risk of future harm is important to the analysis, whether we decide based on the existing record, we send it back for something, what's the proper means of disposing of the case once we conclude that future harm is part of the analysis?
If you conclude that, I do think that the court or the case needs to go back to the district court.
Thank you.
Before you sit down, under your theory for the proving of this protection order, does the passage of time have any impact?
I believe there is a case, and that was part of my argument I didn't get to, but that's fine. There was a case that said that it's not fatal to whether or not a protection order, and that was a domestic abuse protection order, but it's not fatal. And there
Is Sarah Kay the case you seek?
Sarah Kay v. Jonathan Kay, yes, thank you.
Can it be relevant?
I think it can be relevant, and that was one of the arguments here is that there so much time had elapsed, but there's a lot of reasons that all that time elapsed. It wasn't just that this appellee woke up one morning and decided to do something that had occurred 3.5 years ago. The appellant put the wheels in motion, and that's included in the brief.
In this situation, the trial just ended when the request was made. So you have that fact here. The trial just ended when the request for the protection order was made. So you have that fact here for the passage of time.
The criminal trial.
The criminal trial. I apologize. The criminal trial had just ended.
Yeah.
And that request was made. Let's say that 15 years from now, could your client still come in and ask for another one?
Well, I think it depends on the circumstances, right?
Let's say nothing happens between now and then.
I mean, I guess she could ask for it, but that doesn't mean she would get it.
Do you believe she'd be entitled to it under your standard?
I can't answer that, really. After 15 years, I mean, it's still, I could come back and say, what if he got sentenced to prison for 15 years? and then got out. You know, a sexual assault's an egregious, an egregious thing to have happen, and it's very traumatic for a victim. So I can't really answer that right now. Thank you, though. Sorry. Okay, I am way out of time. Thank you so much. Oh, and I will, if I may, just say we are asking that the appellee respectfully request the court affirm the holding of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 57 seconds.
57 seconds. We'll give you a minute, Mr. Ivan.
Judge Castro, you're talking about the inference, and I think in Maria A., well, it's a domestic violence case, it says we cannot assume risk. And that's the problem, is just because there's a claim of sexual assault doesn't mean that there's a future risk, and that's what we need to look at.
We also said in Maria A., said we recognize that in many, if not most instances, a showing of abuse is sufficient to merit the affirmation of an ex parte protection order. So what is it about this case that distinguishes it from the many or most instances where, assuming we're going to transpose the same framework, the threshold showing is enough?
Well, the threshold showing is a claim multiple years in the past with no claim of showing of present or future harm. And that's the problem in this instance. After 3.5 years, I agree there's no statute of limitations, but there has to be some indication of threat, risk, or something that puts the person at harm, not just a mere claim of a past sexual abuse.
So the passage of time is your primary argument as to why the abuse alone isn't enough to affirm the ex parte order?
Passage of time with no other threats or indication of any risk of harm. I mean, there's no
statements. Is that why you draw attention to the getting together and exchanging information, going on a hike together, those types of events?
Yes, those factors are not relevant to say that there's a statute of limitations or anything. It's to show,
well, look, sexual assault did not occur.
Right. I mean, that may be that, but that's, like I said, I think that's a harder issue to get into, and we're not going to be able to litigate that in the time given. But it's clear,
well,
these people continue to interact with each other.
This incident, doesn't the judge have an entire set of facts and history from these people that the judge could infer?
Well, I don't. I struggle with that infer, Your Honor, because if we're not going to assume risk, if you have
to show.
We're
talking
risk,
about the future.
Yes.
That
but
requires
that's facts.
Inferring, doesn't it?
Well, not really. You put facts that establish that risk. Facts are they got along, no threat. They continued to interact, no threat. There was after the report, before arrest, no threats. From the time of the acquittal until time of service, no issues, no threats, no interaction. And there's some vague notion of retaliation, which just doesn't demonstrate. And when that retaliation means litigation, definitely doesn't show a risk of harm. And that's why I struggle with the term infer, because what you're trying to do is read the tea leaves instead of looking at the facts.
That's what protection orders are all about, reading the tea leaves.
But they're based upon the facts that show a history, whether it's threats, whether it's a pattern of abuse, whether there's lots of continued contact and follow-up. We have none of those kind of things. It's not reading the tea leaves. It's looking at evidence and making a prediction, much like any expert might do in any other type of matter. They take the evidence and say, we think this could happen. The judge does the same thing here. We look at the facts, and do those facts demonstrate a future risk of harm?
You have not in this appeal attacked the district court's finding, factual finding, based on a preponderance of the evidence that a sexual assault occurred. Right?
That is correct. I just don't think we're able to do that with the standards and the time we had. We went with what I thought was the more appropriate issue of the risk of future harm, and we put on evidence we thought that demonstrated that there is no risk of future harm, no threat of harm, and nothing that indicates she would be in harm based upon nearly 3.5 years of continued interaction between the parties until the criminal case was brought.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Counsel, that concludes arguments in Foote versus Keener. You are excused. The next case of the day is Hoffman versus Beckerman.